This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. There's an old saying that we hear what we want to hear and ignore the rest. It's a saying with a grain of truth, perhaps, and it has to do with the way we communicate in the office with our loved ones, how we form an identity of ourselves. And it has a lot to do with feedback, how we hear criticism or instruction from other people, and how we process it. When we receive feedback, it sets off a clash between two powerful human desires. On the one hand, the need to grow and improve. On the other, the need to be accepted for who you are. All this is the subject of a new book co-written by my guest today. It's called Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well, by Doug Stone and Sheila Heen. They're both lecturers at Harvard Law School's Program on Negotiation and co-founders of Triad Consulting. And they're with me now, Doug Stone and Sheila Heen. Welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to talking about this book. It's got a lot of really interesting ideas. And I want to invite our listeners into the conversation. Listeners, you can join us. How well do you deal with feedback? How do you balance a desire for growth with the need to be accepted for who you are? How well do you receive feedback at work or in your home? How about your partner? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also at Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Doug and Sheila, let me start off with a very basic question. You know, what are we talking about here when you refer to feedback? What are we talking about?
Well, I think the obvious thing that everyone thinks about are formal feedback processes at work, right? Mm-hmm. It's your performance appraisal. It's a 360 feedback process. Maybe it's a mentoring program. But really, we're talking about how you learn from life. I mean, we're surrounded by feedback in the way that people respond to you and react to you. You know, it's the lecture from the cop on the side of the road. It's all of the suggestions from your spouse, which you think of less as feedback and think of more as being annoying. But, you know, they're trying to tell you the impact that you're having on them.
Yeah. And the really important and sort of twist in your book is a lot of the time, I think we talk about how to give feedback, how to be tactful with people and to guide them and get them to sort of respond to what you want them to respond to. But this book is really saying, think about the way you receive feedback, right?
Yeah. If you think about where the leverage is in the conversation between someone who's giving feedback and someone receiving it, no matter how good the person giving is, no matter how skilled they are, empathetic, thoughtful, the person receiving it is the one that determines how it's heard, how it's interpreted, whether it's taken, whether they change. And so we wanted to write a book that just addressed that piece of the equation that's often missing.
And of course, this is essential information, an essential set of ideas in the workspace, but also at home in personal relationships, right?
It absolutely is. And one of the things that's interesting is that the research shows, and this is some research from John Gottman out in Seattle, a marriage researcher, that a happy marriage rides in part, it's correlated with whether the spouses are willing to take influence or coaching from each other.
Mm. So what happens? I mean, what's the best way to describe, you know, what happens that is not good when someone can't take feedback or can't accept feedback?
Well, we tend to have three reactions that sort of get in the way, three triggers, as we put it. One is that we're listening through the frame of truth, which to us as the receiver is, well, what's wrong with the feedback? And if we can find any little thing that's wrong, or maybe a big thing, we just set the whole thing aside. A second thing that we do is we mix up sort of who's giving us the feedback with the substance of the feedback. So if we have some doubt about the person giving it to us, or we feel we don't like how they treat us sometimes, we get rid of that feedback as well, even if the feedback is actually useful or helpful. And then the third trigger is sort of inside ourselves. It's how we see ourselves. And very often when we get feedback, whether it's good feedback or not good feedback, we're so overwhelmed emotionally by it that we just have to set it aside as well. So each of these can cause us to just disqualify the feedback, no matter whether it's good or not.
And before I ask you about sort of the best way to handle these triggers, what's the harm in that? I mean, what's the corrosive result of sort of shutting down and not being able to receive feedback?
Well, I think that the biggest impact is that it blocks your ability to learn and to see yourself accurately. And that means that your relationships can stagnate. It means that you can stall out at work. And often we attribute that to other people. Like, I don't have any good mentoring. I don't get enough feedback. You know, the people that I choose to date, they're all the wrong people and there's something wrong with them. And if you don't turn around and look at yourself, your own choices there and what you can learn from your experiences is the one thing that you actually have control over.
Mm. I want to play a little bit of tape just to sort of stimulate this conversation. This comes from the HBO show Lucky Louie. And you folks refer to this scene actually in your book. And in this scene, Louie gives his wife, Kim, a bouquet of red roses, and the conversation quickly turns toward feedback. Here we go.
Try not to take this the wrong way, okay? But if we're going to be married for the next 30 years, I need you to know that red roses are not my thing. It's just, I really don't like red roses, okay?
Okay, yeah, I get that.
Okay.
Can I critique how you just told me that? I just think that you should have thanked me for the flowers first and then said the thing about the roses.
Not really.
Okay, so you write about this exchange in this book, and I got to say right off the bat, I'm kind of coming down on Louis' side here, but you say this is a good illustration of dealing with feedback. So what happened in this scene?
Yeah, so what's going on there? And it's really subtle, which is what we love about it, and it's also incredibly common. So Kim, the wife, is saying, Kim's basically giving Louis feedback. I don't like roses. And then we sort of find out that there's more to it than that from her point of view. She doesn't feel heard by him,
right,
or listened to. So that's pretty simple. She's saying, I don't like red roses. Louis then has a choice of how to respond. If he were responding on the topic that Kim is raising, he would say, well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about why you don't like them or why I forgot or something about that topic.
Yeah.
Instead, what he does is what we call switch tracking, which is just a fancy word for switching topics sort of unintentionally. And he basically turns around and gives Kim feedback on her delivery of the feedback
right.
to him.
You didn't give the feedback to me properly.
You didn't give the feedback to me properly. You don't appreciate me. I went out of the way to get roses. So she's giving him feedback. He's giving her feedback. Structurally, what you have is two people giving feedback to nobody. Neither one of them is listening. Mm. And so it sort of doesn't matter who chooses to listen to the other. One of them has to listen to the other for this to be a good conversation.
So how should that conversation? So let's say it should have begun with Kim saying, look, I don't like roses. I'm sorry. And he should have just received that.
Well, you could coach Kim to say it better, right? But let's say you only have access to changing Louis. So Kim says, I don't like roses. And Louis could say, gee, let's talk about that. That's obviously sounds kind of important to you, or you wouldn't have raised it. And then they talk about that for a while. And then he could swing around and say, you know, there's another thing I want to talk about as well. I want to talk about the fact that even if I got it wrong, I did think about it, and I was trying to do the right thing. And sometimes when I try to do the right thing, I feel like you're not noticing. So that's the second topic isn't a topic you should just forget about and ignore. But you can't talk about both of them at the same time. The beauty of that little clip that you played is it sounds like they're talking to each other. It sounds like they're both talking about the same topic, the roses, but they're really not. They're just in two separate conversations.
Talking past each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Listeners, we're talking to Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen. They're the co-authors of Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback. Well, you can join this conversation. How well do you deal with feedback? How do you balance a desire for growth with a need to be accepted for who you are? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And Doug and Sheila, really interesting topic, and we've already got a bunch of callers. So let's go to Jim, who's calling from Arlington. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Do you mean Jill?
Oh, I'm so sorry, Jill. I misread. I don't have my reading glasses
on.
Oh, Jill, that was such skillful feedback.
Yes, that was it. My question was, did you mean Jim? Okay, thank you. No, I just wanted to turn myself in. I don't really know how to receive feedback well, but here's a way not to receive it well, which you mentioned the two primal needs that we have. Another one, I think, is to prove that we're right, or maybe only me, but when I get feedback on something, even if 90% of it is right, but that 10% is wrong, I try so hard, but I have a terrible tendency to complain and say, oh, no, you are wrong, and try to give bad feedback to the other person, and that, of course, causes fighting, not physical fighting, but and does nothing to improve the relationship. It makes it much worse. I think what I should be shooting at is gracefully saying thank you, in my head, repeating the good feedback, or even saying thank you for point A, B, and C that I think are good points, and if I think D is a horrible idea, just keep it to myself. It's not necessary to turn the other person into me. I don't have to change their mind. That's not the reason
right.
that you're giving me feedback.
Jill, you put some good ideas on the table. Thanks so much for the call. Sheila, what do you hear in Jill's
Well, Jill
comment?
Will be pleased to learn that she is exactly right about this and that she's not alone. I think all of us have this tendency to do what we call wrong spotting, which is the minute we get the feedback, we feel like we have to decide, is this right, in which case I have to worry about it and feel anxious about it, or is it wrong, which means I can safely shelve it and move on with my life. And the challenge here is that there will always be something wrong with the feedback. Where they gave it, when they gave it, how they gave it, who gave it to you, you're always going to be able to find something wrong. And I would actually flip Jill's percentages. I think sometimes 90% of the feedback can be wrong, but it's the 10% that might be right that you still can learn from. So one of the things that helps me is not to actually be silent about what's wrong, but actually to make myself two lists. And I've got two columns. Here are all the things that are wrong with the feedback. And now I have to move over to this other column, which is labeled what might be right about it, which helps me just get on the table and get out.
So even if just 10% of it is right, it's still going to be useful, right?
Yeah, it can still be useful. And by the way, we don't think that receiving feedback well requires you to take the feedback, but it does require you to figure out how to sort for what might be helpful rather than just throwing it out instantly.
All right. Let's take another call. Steve is calling from Cambridge. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi. I was thinking that the example you used may not have been such a good example. I'm not sure what the social research says. But I always brought up that when someone gave me a gift and that the gift was given in good faith, I thanked that person. I did not describe to them what I thought was wrong with it.
Yeah, you're talking about the example we played of Kim and Louie from the HBO show Lucky Louie.
Exactly. Right. I think under these circumstances, my predictions for that marriage with someone like Kim is it's not going to last very long.
Okay.
You know, your prediction in this case is 100% accurate because on this fictional TV show, they actually end up getting divorced. So you're onto something there.
But what about cordiality? I mean, weren't you brought up to, when someone gave you a gift in good faith, to thank that person and not to describe what you didn't like about it?
Well, sure. But here's the dilemma, which is you can't control someone else. So one of the questions is, if you do give someone a gift and they turn around and have feedback for you about the gift, how do you want to handle that moment?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's not just what the other person choosing to violate sort of social norms and graciousness, which every once in a while human beings tend to do, at least in my life. I don't know about you, Steve. But how do you want to handle that situation with a grace and some curiosity of your own?
Yeah, and I would just add that I think it's your example, Steve, of the social norms is a good example of why there's so much conflict in relationships and why it's actually pretty common, which is that we all have these implicit rules about the way things should be, and our rules feel absolutely right to us, and we can, you know, we know lots of people that follow our rules. And then when we come into conflict with somebody who doesn't have the same rules, it just seems like it's a matter of right and wrong. And, you know, in this case, what's going on with Kim, as we learn a little bit later, is that it's pretty deep-seated with her that she's feeling frustrated with Louis, and she may not know how to bring it up that skillfully, but it's an important thing for her.
Steve, thanks so much for the call. Doug, I want to come back to these triggers that you talked about, the truth trigger, the relationship trigger, the identity trigger, the things that trigger us to sort of shut down and not receive feedback productively. What's the best response to these triggers? How do we get around them?
Well, first, just recognizing them, the self-awareness, but then each trigger has its own sort of methodology of moving through it. So with the truth trigger, Sheila was talking about making two lists, a list of what's wrong with it. And the great thing about making a list of what's wrong with the feedback is that it liberates you then to think about, well, what actually is right about it. The second trigger with in terms of relationships, it's really a matter of thinking through how do I separate the person from the feedback, mm-hmm. and sort of discuss both. The feedback's important, and then whatever interpersonal issue we're having is important. And I think the third one is the toughest, and it relates to how do we not get knocked over by feedback. You know, feedback can be incredibly painful, brutally painful sometimes, and our self-esteem or self-image, our identity can kind of fall apart in the face of that. And so how do you contain the feedback to mean what it actually means, which might be rough enough to deal with, but what we often do is we actually exaggerate it. Someone says, you know, you were singing off key, and we go from singing off key in our mind, we're thinking, I sing off key, I can't do anything right, everybody hates me, I'm going to die alone in the gutter. And we actually start snowballing in that way. And so it's really a matter of being very aware about containing it.
I see. Interesting. How, I know you folks have done research on this, but when it comes to feedback, of course, in companies, we're talking about performance reviews. We're talking about something that's supposed to be an essential way that companies sort of stay cohesive, move forward, improve. How does the corporate world do? I mean, is there any way of measuring this?
That's a great question. So we've worked with organizations on six continents across all kinds of industries and cultures. Mm. We haven't yet met an organization where people don't complain that performance conversations don't happen, either that they're not honest, or that the feedback is resisted, or that the feedback that you get is unfair or off base in some way. And the typical response is to teach managers how to give more effectively, mm-hmm. and that is helpful. But at the end of the day, the receiver's in charge of what they let in.
It makes sense because obviously there are many more people receiving feedback than giving it. So you might as well sort of go to the source and deal with the people who are receiving it.
I think that's right. And the most valuable thing that leaders in an organization can do is actually get better at receiving themselves. Because if they model wrestling and sorting for what's useful at each turn, they're actually... not only will they get better, of course, but in addition, they're demonstrating what is valued in the organization.
Let's try to get at least one more call in here. Lucia is calling from Danvers. Lucia, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys?
Very well, thank you. What's on your mind?
I think this is a great conversation, and it's reminding me of something I've actually recently learned about feedback. And it's, I was in a relationship with someone, a wonderful person, and I've really learned that in order to receive positive feedback, I think a person needs to have a really strong sense of self, and not fear being alone, not fear being by themselves, because if you don't have a strong sense of self, I feel like your defenses are immediately going to be up, no matter what, because you're not accepting of yourself, so how can you accept what anyone else has to say?
All right, Lucia, let me put that to our guests. Sheila, strong sense of self as a condition, a requirement for being good at receiving feedback.
Yeah, so we should all definitely order that on Amazon immediately. Right?
Strong sense of self.
Exactly. I love Lucia's observations because I think they really reflect what a struggle that is. Mm-hmm. And particularly the research around how we're wired suggests that individual variation in how sensitive we are to feedback, how far we swing, and how long it takes us to recover can vary by up to 3,000%. And that when we are upset by a piece of feedback, it becomes distorted and grows. So Lucia's point about having a strong sense of self, we would describe as moving from a fixed identity to a growth identity. Mm-hmm. People with a fixed identity, and this comes out of some of the research by Carol Dweck out at Stanford, she calls it a fixed mindset, feel like, well, I am how I am. I'm either smarter or I'm not, and I'm not going to get smarter by working at it because it's just an inborn trait. And so every piece of feedback about whether I missed something or was incompetent is a verdict. And if I can shift that to really sort for coaching and think of myself as having a growth identity, well, then how I am now is just how I am now. And it's actually helpful for me to get feedback because it tells me what I should work on next.
It sounds simple, but it's difficult.
Yeah,
but it's really hard. But when you lay it out like that, it sounds straightforward. We have about a minute left, or actually less, maybe about 40 seconds. So I'd love you to leave us with some tips for eliciting feedback that is the most helpful.
So one thing that we found very helpful is when we suggest that people try to elicit feedback, they tend to go to their boss or their colleagues or their spouse, and they say, well, so I think I'm supposed to try to get feedback. That sounds like a good idea. So do you have feedback for me? People have no idea how to answer that question. They don't know if it's a real question or should I really say what I'm thinking. A more effective way to do it is to literally say, I'm trying to work on some things. What's one thing that you see me doing where I end up getting in my own way? And there's two good things about that phrasing. One is that you're asking for just one thing, because really you don't need 10 things. One thing is hard enough.
Right.
So working on one thing is very helpful. And then being clear that when you say, what's one thing that gets in my way, you're being clear that you really mean it. You really want some feedback here.
All right. Well, that's Douglas Stone, co-author of Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback. Well, Doug, thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
And his co-author, Sheila Heen, thank you as well.
Absolutely.
They're both lecturers at the Harvard Law School and co-founders of Triad Consulting. You can read an excerpt of their book at radioboston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, the Cambridge-based Revolutionary Snake Ensemble taps the soul of New Orleans. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.